The drizzle stopped sometime around 10, but the sky stayed that pale winter gray that Buenos Aires does so well. I was already on my third coffee of the morning at Rita's Specialty Coffee on Armenia, watching the barista steam milk with the kind of focus most people reserve for surgery. The flat hunting had reached its final stage, and I had a list of three places to view in Palermo before lunch. My phone buzzed with a message from the real estate agent, a woman named Silvina, who typed in all caps and used more emojis than my niece. The first flat was on Costa Rica, just off the cobblestones of Palermo Soho, and the address came with three purple hearts and a thumbs up. I finished my coffee and paid at the counter. About 4,000 pesos for a cafe con leche, which these days is roughly $4, and honestly, it's the cheapest luxury in the city. I walked out onto Armenia and headed toward Costa Rica, past the boutiques and the street art that changes every few weeks. The air smelled like wet pavement and, somewhere, a bakery baking medialunas. A man in a wool coat walked his poodle without a leash, the dog trotting ahead like it owned the block. Pretenos do that, you know, they treat their dogs like tiny mares with veto power over every corner. The first flat was on the third floor of a building with a narrow elevator that felt like a wardrobe. One bedroom, a kitchen with a two-burner stove, and a living room that looked out onto a quiet street. The radiators were the old cast-iron kind that click and groan all night, which I've learned to love. Silvina quoted 600,000 pesos a month, about $650, plus a deposit of 2 months and a real estate commission that made my eyes water. It was more than I wanted to spend, but the parquet floors were original, and the building had a porter named Ramon who had worked there since 1989. I took a photo of the light coming through the balcony door and told Silvina I'd think about it. The second flat was in Palermo, Hollywood, near a block of craft breweries and a co-working space that advertised a podcast studio in the lobby. The apartment itself was a grim shoebox with a window that faced a brick wall. The kitchen had a fridge that hummed like a distant chainsaw, and the mattress on the bed was wrapped in plastic. Silvina saw my face and shrugged, typing on her phone. That one was marked down to 460,000 pesos, but I knew I'd never want to wake up there. I thanked her and walked out, already mentally crossing off the entire street. The third flat was in Palermo Chico, the leafy, quiet corner of the barrio where the embassies sit behind high gates and the trees are older than the buildings. A one-bedroom on Avenida Figueroa Alcorta, on the fifth floor, with a balcony that faced the Bosques de Palermo. The rent was 640,000 pesos, but it had a proper kitchen, a washing machine, and a bedroom with morning light. The landlord was a retired architect named Horacio, who collected mate gourds and had a framed photo of himself with Borges taken in the 1980s. He told me the building was built in 1965 and that the walls were thick enough to whisper secrets through. I told him I'd take it. We signed a provisional agreement in his kitchen while his cat, a fat orange thing named Fideos, sat on the papers. The paperwork took over an hour. Silvina brought out a binder with clauses in small print and a stamp that she banged on the table with real authority. I signed my name, then initialed, then signed again in all the places where the ink was faded. Horacio made us tea and talked about his years in Mendoza, where he said the best asado in the country is cooked over vine cuttings. I paid the first month's rent and the deposit, a sum that made my bank account wince, but it was done. I walked out onto the street with a key in my pocket and a feeling that I couldn't name. It wasn't exactly excitement. It was more like the relief of choosing a good corner in a long game of chess. I took the bus back toward the Microcentro, swiping my SUB card on the reader with a satisfying double beep. The fare was about 500 pesos, just over 50 cents, and the bus was warm and almost empty. I sat by the window and watched the city slide past. The gray towers of Puerto Madero, the red brick warehouses, the Calatrava Bridge. A woman across the aisle was reading a paperback with a cover that had a painting of a gaucho on it. The bus stopped at Plaza de Mayo, and I got off to walk the last few blocks. The square was quiet for a Wednesday, just a few office workers eating sandwiches on the benches and a cluster of pigeons arguing over a crust of bread. I had read about the Feria de Editores, or FED, the free book fair that runs from the 6th to the 9th, and I wanted to see if I could get a sneak peek before the crowds. A friend I'd made at a Malanga had mentioned it, saying it was the best place to find small presses from all over Latin America. I walked toward the cultural center where it was being held, past the bookshops on Avenida Corrientes, where the windows were stacked with new novels and old political essays. The venue was a school building with high ceilings and a courtyard that smelled of wood and paper. The fair wasn't officially open yet, but a few vendors were setting up, unrolling posters of their covers on trestle tables. I bought a coffee from a kiosk and wandered, watching a woman carefully arrange a stack of poetry books by a young Argentine author I'd never heard of. I spent an hour there, reading back covers and trying to remember my Spanish grammar long enough to understand half the blurbs. A publisher from Bolivia gave me a bookmark with a llama on it and told me his press was looking for translators. I took his card and promised to think about it. By the time I left, the drizzle had returned and the streets were slick with that cold, gray rain that feels like it's been falling since the beginning of time. I ducked into a cafe near the Microcentro, one of those old places with marble tables and waiters in white jackets. I ordered a cafe con leche and a media luna and sat by the window watching the city go by in soggy slow motion. The place was quiet, the kind of mid-afternoon lull that feels like a held breath. I had a list of things to do before the weekend: register at the local health clinic, top up my soup card, and call a locksmith about getting extra keys made. But sitting there, watching the rain streak the glass, I felt the city slowing down to my pace. It's a strange thing, the winter rhythm of Buenos Aires. The days are short and damp, and the nights are cold, so people fold inward. They go to cafes and malongas and bookstores. They drink made in groups and talk politics for hours. They don't rush. I remembered something a friend from Cordoba once told me. Argentina runs on its own clock. You just have to find the minute hand. I looked at my coffee at the steam curling up, and I thought I finally understood what that meant. That evening, I went to a malanga in San Telmo that a taxi driver had recommended, a small place called Gristle that I'd read about in a guidebook. The cover was about 1,000 pesos, so a dollar, and the room was all dark wood and dim lamps and the smell of leather and old perfume. A bandoneon was tuning up on the stage, and a few couples were already on the floor, moving with the careful gravity of people who have danced together for decades. I sat at the bar and ordered a Fernet con Coca, about 3,500 pesos, and just watched. The tango here is different at a neighborhood malanga. It's not a show, it's a conversation, a way of leaning into the music without needing to say anything out loud. I stayed until the last set, then walked out onto the cobblestones under a sky that was finally clearing, the stars paler than they should have been under the city lights. I took a taxi back to my temporary place, a room in a guest house not far from the Korean block in Palermo. The driver, a man in his 60s who listened to a football match on the radio, asked me where I was from. When I said I'd just moved here, he laughed and said, "Welcome to the only country where the future is always last month." We both laughed, and he dropped me off at the door. I stood on the street for a moment, key in hand, the cold air biting at my ears. The building was quiet, just a light on in the porter's window, and I could hear the faint sound of a TV from someone's apartment. I climbed the stairs, unlocked my door, and hung my coat on the hook. Tomorrow I'd start the paperwork for the CUIL, and the day after that, the bank would open an account in my name. But tonight, the city had already decided to take me in, one slow step at a time. I sat on the edge of the bed and pulled out my phone, scrolling through photos of the morning. The flat, the key, the light on the parquet floor. I felt a small, quiet thrill, the same one I get when a new chapter starts and the page is still blank. I thought about the renaming of the month, how August in Buenos Aires is the month of tango, with malongas and classes everywhere you look. I'm told the festival kicks off in a few weeks, the Tango BA Festival Y Mundial, and that is the talk of the city. I'll be on the road by then, probably, heading north toward the mountains. But I'm glad I caught this week, this quiet, gray, in-between week that felt like an introduction without a handshake. Buenos Aires doesn't give you everything at once. It gives you a street, a cafe, a key. It asks you to come back tomorrow and start again. So that's where I'll leave it for now. I have a flat, a stack of sign papers, and a new routine that involves coffee, buses, and long walks along the river. The winter is easing, just a little, the days stretching a few minutes longer each afternoon. If you're thinking of coming here, whether for a week or forever, bring a good coat and a willingness to wait. The city is beautiful, but it moves at its own pace. And I think that's the point. I'm Camila, and this has been the Argentina Travel Podcast. Until next time, cuídense.